Hello, everybody. It's George from Ireland. I don't usually wear the same t-shirt in two subsequent videos, just change for the sake of it. Anyway, here we are. So, commenting on this Westminster election in the United Kingdom, the Conservative campaign could scarcely get worse. If I didn't know better, I would think that that Sunak is screwing it up on purpose. Paisley doesn't want to be Prime Minister any longer. I mean, I know some people are close to him. I've never met him. Well, actually, so I did once, almost 2 years ago, but it wasn't just for a few seconds spoke to him. He's going to be defenestrated by the public rather than his own party. And his decision to call the election early was very foolish. And a datum has come out to prove that. The 2% inflation figure. Had he waited a couple of weeks, that would have come out. That's something to talk about. The Conservatives are talking about it now. But, you know, it's too late. People have largely made up their minds. Polling day is a fortnight tomorrow. So some people will be sending in their ballots tomorrow. I think the last day to register was yesterday, if I've got that right, register to vote. On the Conservative campaign, it's leaden-footed. There have been a lot of own goals. It's just dreadful, really. And it's got worse and worse through the campaign, keeps sinking. And then there'll be some rally towards the end. The only thing the Conservatives got going for them is this thing, this tax bombshell by Labour. Is it just going to hammer away against that? We'll get that one relentlessly, ruthlessly. And that's the only thing that will help them gain a little bit of ground, frightening people, prevent a huge Labour landslide. Don't think that's really scaring people, because that is attempt to claw back people. Previously Conservative voters are now tempted to vote for Reform UK. Reform United Kingdom has simply climbed in the polls. And so Farage coming in has been rocket fuel to Reform UK's campaign. So and there's just more and more things going on, like that MP from Montgomeryshire, who's one of Sunak's aides, him placing a wager on the election being held on the 4th of July. He did that 3 days before the election was announced because he had inside information. And that is unlawful. So disgraceful that that's happened. And I don't know, is he not being expelled from the party or anything? So when Sunak called the election, the Tories were 20% adrift of Labour. But with a strong campaign, and bearing in mind the pin polls always underrate the Conservatives, overrate Labour, Tories might have lost by only 10 percentage points. Okay, a fairly bad defeat, manageable. Conservatives end up with, say, 250 seats, Labour 350. Labour got a working majority, not a huge one. And the Conservatives could rebuild on that basis, probably not win the next election, 2029, maybe the one after that. But no, it's got so much worse than that. So Sunak's personal approving is even lower than his party. So he's dragging it down. So why did he join this, call this early election? Well, he's weary of the job, the constant carping, and nothing he ever does seems to improve his personal standing or that of the party. So there was even muttering amongst acolytes of Boris Johnson of some sort of parliamentary coup against Sunak, which I think one of the few things could make it even worse. Anyway, 3,000 people apply in a parliament to be on the Conservative candidates list, roughly. And the Conservatives accept maybe 1,000, only need 631 candidates. Doesn't stand in Northern Ireland, don't stand against the Speaker. And so they'll have the 631 candidates. They'll have 300 and something on the reserve list in case candidates drop out, die, whatever, last minute, have to be booted out because of an unsavoury tweet. And the Conservative Party actually has phoned up some people on that backup list. I mean, not now, it's too late, nominations are closed. Do you want to stand? Because we have to kick someone out, someone doesn't want to do it at the last moment. And when that didn't work, they even phoned up at least one person I know who didn't even make the candidates list, scraping them out of the barrel. Because you phone up someone on the reserve list and often say, it's too late now, I'm too busy at work. I booked it in whatever. And no, if you'd asked me a year ago, fine, I would have campaigned every weekend, but I'm not taking 6 weeks off. I can't take 6 weeks off in some cases. And why? To lose? If they thought going to win, they would go for it. But and it's the unsafer seats are the ones where Tories are more likely to give up at the last moment. So the campaign has been plagued by errors. It was a closely guarded secret what the date of the election was going to be. So that's about the only thing which the Conservative Party succeeded. But the party was therefore ill-prepared, and some constituencies had not even selected their candidates. But ironically, Labour, precisely because they had no control of when the election was going to be, they were ready early. And there was the D-Day disaster, and that offended the very people the Conservatives most reliant on, older people, quite nationalistic people, militaristic people. Labour, of course, has shamelessly exploited this. It was a major misjudgment by Sunak. You know, he doesn't have the common touch, emotional unintelligence. And it was far from crucial to give a TV interview, especially at that particular time. It wasn't even going to be live. So Conservative morale is at rock bottom. It's been a shambolic campaign. For six elections in a row, the Conservative vote climbed 44% in 2019, almost 44%. The highest share since 1979 is going to crash down to less than half of that, maybe 18%. I reckon it'd be a bit higher, like maybe 24%, actually. Anyway, so people were talking about a 1993 Canada-style wipeout for the Conservative and Unionist Party. Remember, the Conservative, Progressive Conservative Party in Canada was reduced to a mere brace of seats. Even the Prime Minister, the odious Kim Campbell, she lost a seat. She's a sworn enemy of fair trials. But the surprising thing is how quickly the Progressive Conservatives bounced back in Canada. But that was partly because they merged another part of the Canadian Alliance. Only 11 years later, after being virtually annihilated, they were back in office. And some say there's the same solution as there for the Tories to merge with Reform UK. So Reform UK has been the real breakout story of this party. The former Brexit party, which people assumed was a busted flush, led by Nigel Farage, is a business which he partly owns. He pushed aside Richard Tice, who was a placeholder for him. Initially, Farage wasn't even going to stand, but he again ruthlessly pushed aside their candidate in Clacton-on-Sea, that Essex constituency, which has got the most favourable demographics of all for Reform UK's brand, as in older, whiter, less educated, economically left behind right-wing opinions. So he said people beseeched him on bended knee to allow his name to go forward in this election. It's done so. So Reform UK has just risen and risen in the polls since the campaign opened. And so the Tory party is at panic stations because the party is not just facing defeat, which happens to all parties from time to time. The party is facing disaster. Now, Reform is offering these facile and populist policies. They're simple and indeed simplistic, but that gulls a lot of people. And impossibilism is a luxury that you can indulge yourself in if you've got no chance of winning the elections. They're not actually going to have to implement these policies. The unworkability is plain to anyone with half a brain. So Farage is the most instantly recognizable figure in British politics, and the name recognition is vital. Just look at Trump, partly because he's been in the game for so long, like over 30 years. This will be the eighth time he's contested a parliamentary seat. And he's been frank about his desire to launch a hostile takeover of the Conservative Party, of which he was a member in the days of Maggie Thatcher. Now, some Conservative MPs will say he should never be allowed to rejoin. Penny Mordaunt, when they put it to her, she didn't actually rule it out, though she did tend that way to say no. But grassroots Conservatives are very attracted to him. So there's 650 seats in the House of Commons, so you need 326 to have a majority. Conservatives won was 380 last time. Now, the worst result for Tories in the recent times was 166 seats. We're back in 1997. 166 seats is the ceiling of what the Tories were predicted to get in this election. But 166 would seem wonderful for the Tories these days. Some opinion polls show the Conservative Party would be reduced to a mere 50 seats. By far the worst result ever. You know, Conservative Party, that name invented in 1830, all the Tories emerge under that name and maybe, you know, exclusion crisis 1681, is something like almost 350 years be the worst result. In terms of seats thus far, 1906 was the worst result, even worse than 97, 130 seats, although the Conservatives are only actually 6 percentage points behind the Liberals at the time. But anyway, the vote share in 1997 was 31% of the vote, but 31% of the vote would seem very lovely for the Tory party now compared to what they're forecast to get, only 18% of the vote. Now, in practice, the Conservatives consistently outperform these predictions, maybe not by one much, maybe by 1 percentage point, not sort of 6 percentage points. There's a Timmy territory factor. People are often lying to pollsters, saying it's an anonymized poll because they don't want to acknowledge they're going to vote Conservative, even they tended to do so because you get called racist, fascist, capitalist, greedy, all the rest of it. And Conservative Party members, supporters, have a higher turnout than support of other parties. The leaders' debates between Sunak and Starmer. Now, Sunak narrowly won the first one, but was trounced in the second one. So like I said, Starmer was unwise to agree to these debates. He was so far ahead, there was nothing to be gained by engage in these debates. It was an unnecessary risk. Should have said, I want to meet real people, not speak to Sunak. I've spoken to him for 4.5 years in the House of Commons. So Labour's being ultra cautious, and it's mostly working. Do nothing foolish and they'll win handily, which is why their manifesto is so bland, so filled with generalities, is wooliness, is that they don't trap themselves into with a specific policy commitment. They don't need to win the election. They regard the Tories as have already lost it, so Labour will win by default. So Labour is very keen to avoid the charge of over-promising and under-delivering, which is why the manifesto offers so little. So Labour is going to inherit a very difficult situation. Economic growth is sluggish, unemployment is 4% and rising, not too bad. Huge numbers of people, 9 million adults economically inactive, some of them, you know, malingering, pretending to be sick. Okay, some of them genuinely are sick. And Labour being the party of welfareism, of dependency, is going to make it even worse. All these problems in the NHS or schools or whatever will not magically disappear because Labour's there. They're all very expensive to solve, and Labour is not promising to raise the fund through revenue. They're going to grow their way out of it. I mean, everybody says that. So there's a pensions time bomb that's due to go off, the university tuition fees, half of which the government admits will never, ever be repaid, the cost of living crisis, housing is ever more unaffordable, there's rising illegal immigration. People are also worried about legal immigration. Labour's going to make illegal immigration far worse by canceling the Rwanda plan. They promised to cut legal immigration. When everybody else says that, Labour says racist, racist, racist. But there they are, scraping the gutter, far-right language. That's what Labour would say when anybody else tries to control immigration. So Keir Starmer is charmless and dull, and the public aren't sold on him, but they don't loathe him at least, which is more than can be said for Rishi Sunak. Some people think that boring is good. They don't necessarily want a showman. They've had people like Boris Johnson or Tony Blair. So his approval ratings are higher than Sunak's, but that's not saying much. Labour's the party of youth, but Starmer's 62. So I suppose that partly balances the youthfulness. They're being outflanked on the left by the Liberal Democrats, the Green Party, the Workers' Party of Britain, or in Wales and Scotland, the nationalist parties. So many anti-conservatives assume that Labour will win anyway, so they may not bother to vote. And that is a jeopardy for Labour. Or indeed, they'll treat themselves to voting for a minor party. And that is also problematic for Labour. So Labour can't be gloating too much, because that might reduce turnout, or people want to burst their bubble. So opinion polls, they always overrate Labour. So Labour's campaign has been dull, and the party's opinion standing in the opinion polls has fallen a little bit. Anyway, so Labour's not giving people much to hope for, and they're terrified that people will say they're going to raise taxes. Tories have rammed home the message that Labour will raise the average family's tax bill by over £2,000. Of course, that worked a treat in 1992, Labour's tax bombshell. Trouble is, Conservatives have raised taxes too. So the former Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, is standing as an independent against Labour. He'll probably win. Another problem for Labour is some Muslims are sick of Labour Zionism and are going to vote for far-left parties. There used to be a vote bank for the Labour Party. The Liberal Democrats are the third biggest party. Their vote share will hardly change, but they're predicted to gain dozens of seats, like up to 60 seats, mainly in Tory-held seats in rural southern England. So the Lib Dems are still recovering from their setback in 2019, promising to lead the United Kingdom back into the European Union one day. Strange, considering the first major party to demand an in-out referendum on EU membership. Well, be careful what you wish for, Lib Dems, you may get it. But so an orange infestation is going to break out like a rash across the backside of England. So the Lib Dem campaign has been bland and invisible. What's his name? Sir Ed Davey is an ineffectual leader. The most interesting thing he did was to fall off a paddleboard, literally making a splash because he couldn't garner media attention any other way. So the Tories are winding to test it, and Labour is failing to move people. That should present a golden opportunity for the Lib Dems, and that they haven't capitalised on this is a damning indictment of Sir Ed Davey. Now, the Green Party's got a solitary MP, Dr. Caroline Lucas. I had the misfortune to meet her. She's a raving bigot, but she's retiring. They'll probably hold that Brighton Kemp Town seat, also the gay capital of the United Kingdom. They're tipped to win up 7% of the vote, their best result ever. And maybe two MPs probably get that one-off Thangam Debonair in Bristol, where the Greens control the council. So the Tories are bitterly unpopular, partly been in office since 2010. And you cannot defy political gravity forever. In 14 years, economic growth has been sluggish, austerity has been considerable. The NHS is failing, with people having to wait longer and longer times for appointments. Education has been left-wing miseducation. And that's, you know, the Conservatives fought for actively advancing the leftist ideology. There's a severe paucity of pedagogues, and the situation is aggravating. Crime is on the rise. The cost of living is high. Tax is the highest for like 70 years, and bad public services to show for it. Young people finding it hard never to get on the property ladder. The Tories elected a pathological liar called Boris Johnson. Inflation was horrific, and all right, it's a healthy level now. The party was led by Liz Truss, who wrought untold economic damage to the economy with her economically illiterate, unfunded tax cut. Wow. So many screw-ups. Now, the Conservative Party has never been popular with the under-30s, but is now egregiously unpopular with the under-30s. Only 7% of 18-year-olds plan to vote Tory. I'm surprised it's that high. So the Scottish National Party rules Scotland, and obviously Scotland's represented in Westminster. The SNP's neck and neck in the opinion polls with Scottish Labour. So remember, Labour ruled the roost in Scotland at Westminster level from, I think, 1955 to 2000, and when would it be? 2015. But after 9 years in which Labour did very poorly in Scotland, it looks like Labour's back as a strong party, if not the strongest. I don't think the SNP will do that badly in Scotland. I mean, I think they'll win almost the same seats as Labour. You know, that Labour will say 30, SNP maybe 25. So Labour's definitely going to win overall in the United Kingdom. The only question is the size of the majority. The Tories are so desperate, they're saying, oh, one party socialist state, avoid that one. So as I pointed out, the risk for Labour is precisely the fact that they're so far ahead. There's a danger of complacency and premature triumphalism. So they're trying to say, no, we're not going to celebrate before we win. So anti-Tories are tempted to vote for minor parties, as I say, as they think Tory defeat is guaranteed, which it is. Anyway, landslide victories often happen with low turnout, and this probably will be no exception. Amongst the Tories, the big question, who's the next leader? I'm saying Kate can be Badenoch, partly 15 out of 27 cabinet ministers predicted to lose their seats. Jeremy Hunt, one of the most vulnerable. Penny Badenoch, fairly vulnerable. Even Liz Truss. Rishi Sunak may well be the first sitting prime minister ever to be unseated. Now, some former prime ministers have lost their seats. H.H. Asquith in 1918, later regained one. Or Andrew Bonar Law in 1906. But other former, Liz Truss, a former prime minister, probably lose hers. Theresa May is standing down. David Cameron's in the Lords. Johnson left the Commons in disgrace. So anyway, then the question is, do the Tories tack right or left? I reckon right, partly they're the only people left in the party. Moreover, they've got to see off the challenge from Reform UK. The big question is Reform UK a one-hit wonder, forecast to get anything up to 7 seats? I'm saying 3. But do they get annihilated into 2029, or do they retain their foothold and even build on it to half a dozen seats? And how soon will the Tories recover? Maybe never. There's no God-given right for the Conservatives to be one of the duopoly. It's possible that the Liberal Democrats will overtake the Conservative Party, although I don't think that's going to happen, in either share of the vote or number of seats. And the Tories could be reduced to a third-party status for a century or more. That's what happened to the Liberals in 1922. So my forecast moment is Labour 40% of the vote, 441 MPs. Conservatives 24% of the vote, 100 MPs. Reform 14% of the vote, 3 MPs. Lib Dems 11% of the vote and 49 MPs. The Green Party is going to get 7% of the vote and 2 MPs. The Scottish National Party 3% of the vote and 30 MPs. Right. Thank you so much on my channel. Goodbye.